Chapter 44 Camping and the Ball. February 2013. I can't remember if I told you, DPR wrote to Inigo, but I'll be gone until Sunday afternoon. Ross was relieved to be getting away. The past few weeks had been a complete disaster. He had even wondered if there was something wrong with him. In his online world, nothing was going right. His employees were screwing up all over the place, including Variety Jones, who had failed to deliver some new security code on time. And his offline world wasn't much better, given that he was single and lonely and couldn't seek advice from anyone he actually trusted. On top of his melancholic state of mind, he had discovered that in addition to Curtis Green stealing $350,000 a couple of weeks earlier, someone else had purloined another $800,000 in a different heist. $800,000. Just gone. That was more than $1.15 million stolen in a matter of days. Luckily for Ross, $1 million was now just a small fraction of his savings, but it still stung. There had been a reprisal, of course. And DPR had finally put a hit out on Green. The cost wasn't too insane either. $40,000 up front, and another $40,000 after he was dead. The decision hadn't been easy. That was for sure. But he was convinced that it was the right one. Illustrating to the world that society could be safer by legalizing drugs was more important than the life of a man who might squeal to the feds. Plus, Green had broken the rules of DPR's world. There had to be consequences. Without them, there would be chaos. Before leaving town, DPR sent Inigo one last message, instructing him to hold down the fort for me. Then Ross closed his laptop, leaving DPR hidden within the encryption software he had installed on his computer. There would be no need for him where Ross was going for the next few days. He grabbed his bag and left his apartment. San Francisco's temperature had clung to the high 40s most of the day, yet Ross was dressed as if he were going to the beach, not up north for a two-day hike in the wilderness. His fellow campers had planned appropriately. Selena, whose birthday they were celebrating, was bundled up with woolly socks and a thick scarf. Renee was wrapped three layers thick, like a piece of precious porcelain about to be shipped in the mail. And Crystal, Selena's sister, who was in town from Portland, looked like she was going camping in Antarctica. Ross, on the other hand, had decided this trip would require only a pair of thin Adidas shorts and his new, bizarre, bright red Vibram five-finger shoes, which made it look like he was wearing a pair of gloves on his feet. But in a matter of minutes, the cold ceased to matter to Ross. He felt warm inside as he looked over at Crystal, who was, quite frankly, too beautiful to have him worried about his outfit. Ross instantly had a crush. He was smitten with Crystal. Her long, straight black hair was perfectly braided in the back, revealing her splendid hazel eyes and perfectly puckered pink lips. She looked just like Pocahontas. Once the bags were packed in the car, he hopped inside and it pulled away as the four friends chatted in unison. They drove along the 101 and the Golden Gate Bridge came into view. Selena pulled out her camera to snap a picture of the orange towers, which seemed endlessly high. Ross could see the bright blue sky, as vast and open as the ocean he had seen in Dominica. To the right, he could see Alcatraz again, that looming prison in the distance. They continued along the curvy roadways through Sausalito and into Mill Valley, as they made the hour-long drive to the entrance of the hiking trail. The beginning of the trail was a well-worn gravel path that soon turned into a sinuous bridle walkway. Before long, the group found themselves in the thick of nature. Ross and Renee were perfect gentlemen, offering to carry the ladies' backpacks. Each man slipped one on his back, one on his front. They high-fived with delight. On the other side of the world, in Perth, Australia, 16-year-old Preston Bridges and his mates had been planning their own festivities for a while now. Preston had already picked out his outfit for the Year 12 ball and had been in constant discussion with the other kids at Churchland Senior High School about the after-parties they would attend. Preston was a handsome kid, with thick, fluffy eyebrows and flopped-over blonde hair that hung to one side of his face. He had chosen to spend the hours before the festivities on the beach with his mates, jostling in the fleecy, warm water and talking about the evening ahead. "You look like you went for a spray tan," his father, Rodney, joked with him at around 4 o'clock p.m. when he got home. Preston smirked and bounded off down the hall to change into his tuxedo for the dance. A little more than an hour later, at around 5:30 p.m., Preston walked out of his bedroom for what would be the last time in his life. He looked smart in that black tuxedo, his matching bow tie strung perfectly around his neck. When his mother, Vicky, arrived to pick him up, she noted how handsome her boy looked. His dad snapped a few pictures of them together. In one, Preston turned to his mother, pulled her close to him, and kissed her squarely on the cheek as she beamed. He soon set off for the ball. Ross and his trio of friends finally found camp and set up their blue and white tents on the flat grass of the hillside that overlooked an endless green ocean of Northern California Douglas fir trees. It smelled like pines, and a feeling of calm came over them all, especially Ross. Renee commented that it was like paradise as the group sat down on the slope and watched the world do nothing. Ross snacked on oranges, pistachios, and rice cakes. Soon they built a bonfire. As night fell, Ross and Crystal talked and gazed up at the stars, the smell of smoke disappearing toward heaven. The rest of the weekend for Ross was like a dream. He swam in Kent Lake at the head of Peter's Dam, even though the water was freezing. He rolled down a bright green hill and giggled like a child. He played cards. They hiked, joked, threw frisbees, and skipped, literally, as they explored the wilderness. But most important, Ross and Crystal fell for each other, like two teenagers at a high school dance. The Sun Moon Resort Hotel in Perth, Australia, was the perfect place for an after-party for the dozen young teenagers who had just left the Year 12 ball. The hotel had inexpensive rooms with balconies that overlooked the esplanade and the green, jagged ocean along Scarborough Beach. The smell of chlorine wafted gently up from the pool below as Preston and his friends made their way to the top floor of the resort and into the suite they had rented together. As the night drew on, friends and acquaintances came and went. Yet at around 4:30 a.m., as the boys contemplated calling it a night, one young teenager showed up at the hotel with a surprise. He wasn't one of Preston's close friends, but he wanted to be, and he had brought a gift. "What is this?" "It's N-bomb," the kid explained to Preston. "It's like LSD. "They make it in China," he said. It was synthetic, a drug made in an unregulated lab, and while it was 60 times stronger than acid, it was perfectly safe. The boy said he had purchased a party pack, buy 10, get one free. He had gotten it from a website he had learned about called the Silk Road. The drugs had simply arrived in the mail. Of the 8 boys who were in the hotel room that night, 5 decided to take a hit of N-bomb. The boy who had brought the drugs offered Preston 2 blotters. Of those 5 boys who took the drug, only 1 had an almost immediate adverse reaction to it. Preston Bridges. He immediately began acting erratically. The world around him started to become surreal. He panicked. What the fuck was going on? The hallucinations were taking over, and there was nothing he could do about it. Make it stop. He didn't know where he was, what he was doing. His friends tried to calm him, but to no avail. Everyone was in a panic, most of all Preston. The room seemed to spin on its axis. Help! Help! Around and around, Preston started to run. He was still in the hotel room, still on the second floor. But he ran anyway. He ran off the balcony and into the air, falling 30 feet, head first, into the parking lot below. Sirens began wailing in the distance. The heart monitor made a slow, repetitive beeping noise as Preston lay on the gurney in the hospital. His thick, fluffy eyebrows and flopped over blonde hair sat motionless as tubes snaked around him. His tuxedo was gone. Now he was shirtless, with sensors glued to his chest to monitor his vitals. His black bow tie had been replaced by a neck brace, and that classic Preston Bridges smile was no longer there. Instead, a plastic hose had been placed in his throat to ensure that he could breathe. His mother, Vicky, collapsed on the floor when she saw him. His father wept into Preston's sister's arms. As the day drew on, hundreds of kids from school arrived, streaming in groups of 8 into the hospital room as they wept for their friend who lay there in front of them, the soccer-playing, beach-going teen now motionless. On Monday afternoon, the doctor ushered Preston's family into a small room in the hospital. Then, as tears and shock covered the faces of his mother, father, and sister, the doctor informed the family that at 3:48 p.m., 16-year-old Preston Bridges had died. And then, just like that, the weekend was over. Ross, Renee, Selena, and Crystal packed their bags and drove back through the orange towers of the bridge, back to San Francisco, back toward the Silk Road. Ross returned home with a broad smile. He felt renewed as he opened his laptop and logged on to his world. "So everything's smooth while I'm gone?" he asked Inigo. "Yep, nothing exciting happened." "Good," the Dread Pirate Roberts replied. "Surprising, huh?" Inigo responded. "Like something always happens when you're away. It's like the curse is lifted." Life was looking up. Ross was making plans with Crystal to visit her in Portland in the coming weeks. They were going to stay in a cabin in the woods. They would get massages and order food in a cozy cabin, then romantically nuzzle up to each other over a long weekend. He was so jubilant about the prospect of his new love interest that he had even broken one of his own security rules, telling several of his employees and confidants on the site about the girl he had just met. He even told Nob, his drug smuggler turned hitman, who was currently searching for Curtis Green. "You seem to be in a very good mood," Nob wrote. "I am," DPR replied. "It's a girl," smiley face. "A woman, I should say. An angel." A weekend that had started out shitty had turned great. And the big, fat, sloppy cherry on top was that the Silk Road had made its usual fortune that week, selling drugs to people all over the world, including a party pack of N-bomb to a 16-year-old in Perth, Australia.